I encourage these types of people to look more into our community, to visit our people, talk to our people. They're hardworking people. They love this country and they love to give back.
Alejandro, your active duty Marine brothers, two of them, are stationed at Camp Pendleton, while 700 of their fellow Marines were deployed to LA amidst the immigration protests. And of course, you're a Marine veteran. Your final thoughts on what's happening today? And do you know
I
if your
just think
father will get out?
I'm not sure if my father will get out yet. That's what we're trying to push and trying to do. And then about the whole Marine Corps thing in LA, I mean, I know these Marines are just following orders. But I do believe that they're hurt as well. As I know that a lot of their families are undocumented or came from another country and raised them right, and that's why they're there.
Alejandro Barranco, we thank you so much for being with us. Marine veteran, son of Narciso Barranco, who's currently being detained in California. And Jonathan Hernandez, council member for the city of Santa Ana. Thank you. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KBOO's Summer Drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, on Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m. as I interview Kayla and Ashlyn, founders of Little Critter Crew Small Animal Rescue. We are also joined by an active volunteer, Sarah. We will learn all about the mission of the Little Critter Crew and the animals they rescue, which are many. Bunnies, chinchillas, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, hedgehogs, mice, rats, and sugar gliders, and sometimes kittens and geckos. So don't miss That Vegan Show, Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m., only on KBOO.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and Oregon Country Fair, July 11th through the 13th in Vineta. Fairgoers experience a celebration of art, music, and family on 17 stages in a wooded setting. No tickets will be sold on site. Tickets and information at OregonCountryFair.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler. You're on the air.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was you. Yeah, hi. Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler.
Go ahead, Jacqueline.
Wednesday Talk Radio. Hi. Good morning. And so today we're talking about Trump and Iran. And he declared victory there and fight doubts over the actual damage done to Iranian nuclear facilities. And my question today to you, KBOO listeners, is what do you think of the situation? It appears that he's started a war without authorization from Congress in violation of law. It started a legal war and not granted under the War Powers Act and without congressional authority. And it appears that that he may not have actually, according to military intelligence, U.S. military intelligence, that he did not do a lot of damage to the Iranian nuclear sites either, and may have set back the program maybe a couple of months rather than a couple of years. And I'd like to just also discuss this hour, you know, the use of force by Trump again. We had discussed this in a previous episode when he was, you know, sending, when he deployed the Marines to Los Angeles, the streets there. And I'd just like to hear from callers about their thoughts on this. And you can call into the studio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, so we'd love to hear from the audience. And the number is 503-231-8187. Again, we're discussing Trump and his bombing of Iran, without congressional authorization. And you know, the further militarization, you know, of the Trump administration. This is a candidate, when he was a candidate, Iran, in 2024, being the anti-war candidate. He promised his followers that he would get them out of wars. He disparaged Obama and Biden as warmongers. And now here he is starting wars in contravention to the law, and without getting any, where is Congress? Congress is missing an action on this. It has been for some time. We've all been relying on the courts to stop things, but that is not always a sure thing, as the recent Supreme ruling that has basically given him carte blanche to continue. The Supreme Court ruling the other day to allow him to continue to support at will to third countries, and the appeals court, federal appeals court, finding that basically there was nothing stopping him from basically federalizing the National Guard in California to basically attack the freedom of protesters in Los Angeles. The protest, I think, basically kidnapping of residents of California and even citizens of the United States to other countries and without due process. So I'd love to hear from you all, your opinions on that. Like, what are your thoughts going on right now, particularly with the decline of due process in this country, and how that makes you feel? Okay, we have a caller online. Hello, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hi. You're on Wednesday.
Thank you. I think that if Trump had not pulled out of the agreement, we would have more certainty and security that Iran would not be developing weapons. There was a religious fatwa against the nuclear weapons. They had an agreement that Iran was very conscientiously and clearly following. The three different countries that were allies of the United States were controlling three parts of what would be necessary for fuel to be expanded into or to create weapons, and they were all watching everything. They're the only country in the world that had so much verification and inspections from respected authorities. The United States does not allow that. Israel does not allow that. And this was in spite of the history that when the United States confirms that a country has no nuclear weapons, no way to fight back, then they attack, invade, and destroy as much as possible that country. And still Iran chose to not develop weapons, and the United States and other world intelligence agencies knew that they did not have the will or the ability to produce those weapons, but by attacking them, you create a will and a determination to defend oneself by developing the weapons. And so it was pulling out of the treaty, proving to the world you cannot trust the United States, even changing president to president, you can't even trust the same president in the same term to be keeping their promises. So I think it has made it much more dangerous and terrifying for people who live throughout SWANA, Southwest Asia, and North Africa, and those that are having their country's taxes being redirected from protecting the people in the land of those countries to instead be attacking the people in the land of SWANA. And I think what we can do is to educate each other and to really counter the dehumanization. Just as folks were saying that First Nation peoples were not human, or that those who were enslaved after them from Africa were not human, or that immigrants are not human. We need to counter it by uplifting and appreciating, respecting, and honoring the humans and the culture and the wisdom that we can gain from Persia, from Iran, and from Palestinians and Palestine.
Yeah, good points. I mean, even as this is Trump is proclaiming a ceasefire in around Israel conflict, the Israelis are still bombing Palestinians in Gaza at will, basically. And but yeah, the agreement that you brought up that Obama had negotiated about 10 years ago was, of course, a landmark nuclear agreement with Iran, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. And this is the deal that guaranteed inspection, and without military action, the U.S. was able to negotiate a deal to make sure that there were no more nuclear actors in the region. And of course, Trump pulled us out of that deal, really, I feel, just to disparage any of Obama's achievements and try to undo them without really not even regarding the harm that he'd be causing in the region. And just that it feels like an act of vanity against Obama. Hello? Yes? Colors. Thank you for those really great points. And once again, we are here on Wednesday Talk Radio, and we are discussing. Sounds like we got a music going on. Oh, sorry about that. Hold on a second. Okay, sorry about that. That was not supposed to be happening there. So it's Wednesday Talk Radio, and we are now discussing Trump and his bombing, unauthorized bombing of Iran, and also we should discuss his proclamation of a ceasefire and his basically a denial of U.S. intelligence about the effectiveness of his bombing and of that country. And discussing that as well. Once again, you can call into KBOO here to join the conversation. And the number is 503-231-8187. Once again, that's 503-231-8187. And just call in and join the conversation today. And once again, we are confronting the continued belligerent use of the military, of the U.S. military, by Trump, without any oversight by any other arm of government, of our government, and what that means for the continued dismantling of the rule of law by Trump, and what seems to be, I think Obama even mentioned this recently in a interview, the continued the march towards authoritarianism that we see in our country today, and now being seen in the way that U.S. foreign policy is being conducted unilaterally by one man, and so that's something that we're looking at today. You can call in once again to KABU, and the number here is 503-231-8187, and I'd love to hear from you once again. So, and as I mentioned earlier, there has been attempts to use the court to curtail his use of power, and that has not had some success, but it's a very slow process, and he's acting so quickly it is hard to call up with what he's doing exactly. And I guess it's called flooding the field, which is what he has engaged in, and basically makes it really difficult for us to follow what's going along. I know that some commentators have said that even his bombing of Iran was an attempt to basically get people to stop notice of other sort of particularly his fallout with Elon Musk, and so that's been part of it. So, if you'd like to call in, please do. I know that our that the Oregon State House has basically passed a of law that would make it illegal for the governor for the president to take control of the National Guard here without our governor's okay. And I don't think that's passed the Senate yet, but it has passed the House. So these are attempts by by our own legislature to prevent what happened in California, the militarization of the National Guard there. And so that's what we're looking at now. So so once again, the phone number here is 503-231-8187. And please do call in. So one second here. Here we go. And can you hear me now? Good. All right. So one caller brought up the Iran nuclear deal and what it could have done to prevent the this escalation of events here in the Middle East. And and I think that's really worth taking a look at. It was a 159-page deal that where Iran significantly reduced its nuclear program.
Peaceful purposes. So, in exchange, Iran received relief from economic sanctions. Let me make sure that's off. I'm sorry. Oh, can you hear me okay? Okay, good. I wasn't sure. So, So, anyway, so the deal went into effect in January 16, 2016, after the International Atomic Energy Agency verified that Iran had completed steps, including shipping 25,000 pounds of enriched uranium out of the country, dismantling and removing two-thirds of its centrifuges, and allowing for more extensive international inspections of its nuclear facilities. And at this point, the U.S. and many European nations lifted oil and financial sanctions and released about $100 billion in frozen Iranian assets. And so, according to the Council on Foreign Relations, if all parties had adhered to the deal, experts held that it likely would have prevented Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon for more than a decade. So Obama had left us with a non-military, diplomatic solution to the issue with Iran. And of course, the first thing that Trump did, May 8, 2018, so maybe not the first thing, but he basically pulled us out of that deal and terminating our participation in the JCPOA and reimposing economic sanctions on Iran. And of course, Trump was arguing that the deal was horrible, and he basically said, "It is clear to me that we cannot prevent." Oh, okay. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Pardon my throat, but I'll just start with, you know, it's funny because before, when he was actually being rightly investigated for his actions earlier, he kept talking about a witch hunt. And I would joke at the time that he's a that's a warlock hunt, okay? He's not a woman, so. But now he seems to think he can just wave his magic wand and bomb one day, peace, ceasefire the next. A ceasefire takes both parties to agree to, yes, always. Oh, God, let's see. Oh, just so you know, my wife listens to right-wing radio, and she has been before this idiot was elected, so. But she's not going to stop listening to her three guys, okay? Mm-hmm. They're before Lars, so I won't mention their name, but you get the idea. They call this man the Trumpster. They refer to him as the Trumpster. And the Trumpster said, like it's a little teddy bear or something. I think that's fascinating because I've heard people on the left refer to people that are for Trump as Trumpsters, see?
Yeah.
But they refer to him as the, you know, he's the big kahuna Trumpster or something. A couple of other things for humor would be like Trump supporters, and then I just add on Trump athletic supporters, Trump jockstraps. That's the role. That's how much power, whatever they may have. Goodness, I have watched the Iran thing develop, but what I'm watching is how the news uses word and changes word to change the entire perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, what would America do? And then what must America do? You know, I didn't write it all down, but you get what I'm saying. It's like if and when, and then, you know, I don't know. Yeah, that's important. I usually have more. I'm just getting over a cold.
It's okay. Yeah, no.
I was thinking of this. I woke up last night. I'll leave you with this. Trump, the anti statesman of the union speech. You know, everything he says is just bombastic, vulgar, worse. Oh, my big, beautiful bill. I mean, come on. It's like, what is it? Hocus pocus?
Yeah.
Oh, so, okay, two more. Here we go. So he is the unprecedented president, and he is the trumped-up president.
Yep, that sums it up there. Yeah, it's a... Yeah, people are very attracted to his almost carnival show sort of performance of the presidency. And I'm reading here that he is today Trump is in he is in Europe right now meeting with I think other NATO leaders, and he basically says that he's now saying that Trump needs oil money to rebuild, again signaling possible flexibility on U.S. sanctions. And of course, the other day he was cursing out the two countries, Iran and Israel, and they calling them the F word in public, and then
good
people
God,
feeling like
that far, that low.
Yes,
okay,
and
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, because they were, yeah. You know, I think they Israel
like
they were still bombing and stuff.
Stormer like that of that rank. Okay.
I know. And so when...
I'm not surprised.
Yes. Yeah, I know. And so he...
Where can we go?
I know. Exactly. Now he's claiming that his tough talk basically is what got them to actually actually honor the ceasefire. So that's what's going on there. But yeah, it's quite. I guess my question
comes out of his mouth. It didn't happen. And see what he does.
Yeah, I mean, of course, with his questioning, claiming that Iran nuclear sites were obliterated, even though his own intelligence, military intelligence, and a UN watchdog says the highly enriched uranium probably survived because they probably removed it offsite before then. Yeah. And so, yeah. And so there was, but it's just quite.
You know what? This is what I want to leave people with, because this happens a lot. And this is another instance of where they accuse someone, but what they're actually doing is driving them to do the thing. And then they will be guilty, you know? It's like someone was mentioning, I think it was Flashpoint yesterday, we haven't bombed Iran. I mean, we haven't bombed North Korea. You know, there's the countries that, Pakistan either, the countries that acquired it, now they're safe, basically. It's really fascinating.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I am. Yeah, so it's this idea that his force of personality is going to put the world in order. That is kind of shocking, I guess. And this idea that rather than traditional diplomacy, you know, conducted professionally, as we saw in the Obama and Biden administration, by you know, folks who were trained in these things, instead his sort of cult of personality. He's trying to foster that worldwide with world leaders. You know, I heard NPR today saying that he was happier with the European leaders because they were nicer to him. Right, this is how he discusses foreign policy, and as sort of this personal experience of his, and that that basically the European leaders had learned how to quote unquote manage him, as if he was a child throwing a temper tantrum, and they basically had to learn how to manage his tantrums, and yet he has the power behind him of the most powerful military in the world, and so people are forced to listen to him and to placate him, to praise him. And so I would love to hear from callers, actually from listeners, KBOO listeners, what you think of this form of personal foreign policy based on his own ego. And do you think it could be oddly effective sometimes? Or I guess my fear is that it's just of course, it's too authoritarian. It's just what it means. Basically means that everything is personal for him, even U.S. policy, the bombing of other countries. It's all just a personal kind of a, not flex, I would say probably more of a personal, whether or not his ego is being honored enough. And sort of extraordinary to me that the American public, particularly white Americans, voted, put him back in office again. And they claimed it was because of the of course, because he was a no-war candidate, and also because he was going to fix the economy, which he appears to have done the opposite. The sort of slavish belief in his TV show persona as this great a businessman, even though his own business record totally does not demonstrate this ability. But he's more of a self-marketer, and that's where he's making his money, whether it's putting his name on towers, licensing his name, or doing a TV show persona, or many other sorts of now of course they're selling they're doing the whole crypto coin scam, making money off of that, his family is. And and so how do you feel about all this? I mean, American foreign policy suddenly becoming the experience of one man. Okay, we have a caller. Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, when it comes to when I tell people that, like, Trump is America, people, especially liberals, particularly, they want to throw it back in your face. Like, no, America, they go back to, like, this is an experiment in democracy and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, this is how Trump is the embodiment of how America, even on a professional level, has run the world since the end of World War II. Because, I mean, it has been a project. I mean, you look at, like, how the Look at how they weaponized the rebuilding of Europe through the Marshall Plan. You know, they took an entire continent's resources, you know, and especially when you talk about coal, you know, or fossil fuels in particular, how Europe was not as dependent on fossil fuels, but through the Marshall Plan made it so that Europe was dependent on fossil fuels, and then gave themselves the bigger cut of it through a rebuilding plan. I mean, what Trump is doing is really not off brand for what America does. It's just like, you know, when I tell people when you talk about the difference between competent professional imperialism through what you might have Obama, Biden, and, you know, potentially even Kamala Harris had she been elected, versus a meth head imperialism, you know, where you're just ripping, you know, you're off the rails, ripping the copper out of the walls, you know, but essentially, you're not changing the character of what America is, even if Trump wasn't president. You're just changing the outcome. Maybe not even the outcome, but the
degree,
the way it looks. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, and really, when you think about it, bombing Iran was always in the plan. Mm-hmm. It just may not have always. It may have not. It's been something that was available to them, but when you consider that America is without America's support, Israel would fold a house of cards, and when you consider the fact that Israel's plan was always the greater Israel, if you look at their ambitions versus where they've been stuck the last 70 years, they want this. And especially with Netanyahu in power being more amenable to doing some crazy stuff because he's essentially trying to keep himself from being thrown in jail. I mean, it's really just a confluence of like a perfect storm, if you will. And the ones who benefit from this are just the people who are making the weapons, the people who are, making the weapons, the people who are, who were on the ground for the defense contractors. It's just, people are so surprised at how this is going, but I feel like people have this idealist sentiment about what America is, and they're living in this fairy tale. And when you tell, and when they see the reality of what America is in the world, granted, it has to come through the belligerence of Donald Trump, but I mean, America was always belligerent, but it's just, it's more front facing through Trump. And I just think there's a lot of people who can't handle it. And we've been stuck like this for almost 100 years. And we just, I mean, this should be, I mean, I don't really care for Chris Hedges for a lot of his takes, but you know, he talked about the idea of micromilitarism, where the empire overextends itself in the decay, and that's what brings it down. And I think that's part of what this could be, is micromilitarism as a way to regain some modicum of softer hard power in the world, because America's essentially been a bully and it doesn't know how to operate outside of being a bully. So even if it means bullying Iran, even if it means playing chicken with nuclear warheads, that's what this needs. And America as a country hasn't coped with the fact that, you know, we're essentially like a third world nation masquerading as a first world nation, you know, the second gilded age. I don't know, there's a lot of ways, there's a lot of ways you can look at it, but when you think about it, especially the last presidential election, I mean, neither Kamala Harris nor Biden nor Trump, for that matter, even any of the candidates, really discussed that, America's on the way out. What are we going to do about this? How are we going to interact in a world where we're no longer a hyperpower?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, I was just looking up Chris Hedges, and I see he has a Substack, The Rule of Idiots. And in the last days of all empires, the idiots take over. They mirror the collective stupidity of a civilization that has detached itself from reality. And he's talking about how Donald Trump and the sycophantic buffoons in his administration are updated versions of the reigns of the Roman Emperor Nero, who allocated vast state expenditures to attain magical powers. He quotes from Hitler and the Germans, from political philosopher Eric Vogelin, who dismisses the idea that Hitler, gifted in oratory and political opportunism, but poorly educated and vulgar, mesmerized and seduced the German people. The Germans, he writes, support Hitler and the, quote, grotesque marginal figures surrounding him because he embodied the pathologies of a diseased society, one beset by economic collapse and hopelessness. Vogelin defines stupidity as a loss of reality. So I think that's sort of describing what you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's part of it. But I think the magical thinking is only able to take hold when all the support systems in society have broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at what happened to Weimar, you know, before, I mean, because Hitler wasn't elected in the immediate time, it took about four election cycles to get to Hitler. But it was the Social Democrats who were supposed to be, you know, who worked in conjunction with the capitalists to maintain the capital order when the people clearly wanted a revolutionary change, you know, to socialism. And they played the Democratic Socialists played ball with the capitalists in order to, you know, and told people to vote for the lesser evil multiple times, and that's what led to electing Hitler.
Yeah, I think the capitalists definitely felt like they could control him easily, and just like I think the Republican Party felt like they could control Trump, you know, and utilize his popularity.
Yeah,
goes on to.
And I think
go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to say. You know, and I think it's important to remember, too, that, you know, like, they, capitalists, you know, because fascism is essentially capitalism in decay, and when people talk about, you know, and when there's a choice between fascism or socialism, while capitalists perceive both as dangerous, capitalists will always side with fascism because fascists protect private property. And when you look at in every instance where fascism has taken hold, it was at a greater advance where the consciousness of the people was more advanced towards socialism, and all of the parties essentially posed themselves as people's all the fascist parties had to pose themselves as people's parties, and they essentially hijacked that revolutionary fervor and pushed it in that fascist direction. So they had to manipulate the people.
Yeah.
And you look at Trump's rise; he played himself as the people's candidate, you know, and he
and we have to make. I think often in the news they won't really discuss the issue of that his votership is mostly white, and so they focus on the few people of color who may have, gone over to him, but yeah, I think he was saying the things that that white people wish they could still say, right? A lot of white Americans wish they could still speak freely about their racism, whatever they would like to talk about, they would like to continue to be able to do that and not feel bad about it, and
absolutely.
So but Chris Hedges continues to quote for Vogelin saying that. The demagogue, who was always an idiot, that's idiot with an E at the end, is not a freak or social mutation. The demagogue expresses the society's zeitgeist, its collective departure from a rational world of verifiable fact. I think we're seeing that for sure, you know. And
I agree with that to an extent, but I think it's recognizing that America as a country has always been detached from reality. It came into existence as a very rich settler colonial state that has no communal background. I mean, the idea of America, it was essentially like a white Shangri-La. as some of
the communal background would be the American dream, making money and getting rich, right? I mean, I think
but that was only ever meant for like a handful of people, and you could, I mean, you could extend that outward if you want to, but in rhetorically, but I mean, it's only ever applied to like a handful of people. And I think, you know, because James Baldwin talked about, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, you know, back then when, you know, the suicide rate for black men and women was a lot lower. And he tied it to the fact that, like, the reason why is because, you know, black and brown folks, and I extend that to, you know, a lot of non-white folks in general, like, they understand the American dream to be a sham.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they never had the ability or the you know, like, the time to believe it was true and then have it come out in the wash that it was not, and then have to cope with that. You know, we've always known that it was not that way. And so you have a bunch of people who were brought up believing in the fairy tale that America is, and now it's coming to fruition. So I don't think it's necessary. I mean,
yeah,
I
agree. I think, you know, my in my book Standoff, I look a lot at the you know, what I call the origin story of the U.S. and how it sort of dictates the thinking and the actions, predicts the actions of Americans. And of colonists, right, what they're going to do next. And I see Trump as the ultimate manifestation of that. But I also like to discuss that there were multiple anti-war protests on Sunday through Portland, Hillsborough, and Beaverton. And you know, and also one of our senators, Jeff Merkley, is a senior member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And he's quoted as saying, "I'm not surprised, but I was very frustrated because going to war, it requires congressional authorization, which has not happened. The president had promised 2 weeks of exploration of diplomacy, which he violated," said Merkley. And Merkley says he disagrees with Israel's claims that Iran was close to building a nuclear weapon. He says, "Our intelligence committee has followed this extremely closely. They did have a significant amount, about 1,000 pounds of 60% enriched uranium, which is not enriched enough to build a nuclear weapon." And he believes U.S. involvement was unnecessary. He says, "In addition, Israel had already said that it had done so much damage that it had set back the program in Iran for 2 to 3 years, so there was no urgency to act." A lot of folks are saying that Trump basically jumped on when he saw Israel getting some success. He thought it would be an easy way for him to sort of crown himself with glory by jumping on their military actions. And so Merkley also says, "President Trump campaigned as an individual who would resist this siren call to use U.S. forces in the Middle East in this fashion, but Netanyahu manipulated him, and he didn't have the courage of his convictions to be able to follow the path that made most sense, which was diplomacy." Netanyahu has been trying to get American presidents for decades now to basically join him in a war with Iran, and has been unsuccessful until Trump. And so that's the status of that. I think I heard that members of the different congressional members of oversight committees didn't find out about the bombing of Iran until they heard it on Trump announced it on Truth Social. So this is our chain of command, I guess, where Trump does whatever he likes and doesn't even tell Congress until it's happened via social media, you know, and his social media
that's
owns.
Crazy.
And it's pretty nuts. So
it is nuts, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, please call in. We are discussing Trump's unauthorized and illegal, also under international law. The UN is also stating that this is an illegal act as well under UN rules. And And so, yeah, please call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and we are discussing Trump's unilateral and illegal use of the military, both in Iran, bombing them without congressional authority, authorization, and also here in the United States, sending the Marines to basically you know, patrol Americans and California residents who are protesting the lack of due process by ICE agents and rounding up and even we could call it renditioning Americans and U.S. residents to foreign countries without any sort of due process. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I mentioned earlier that the Oregon House passed a bill last week on Friday that limits the circumstances under which the Oregon National Guard can be deployed into federal active duty. The bill was introduced after the Trump administration decided to deploy the National Guard in Los Angeles earlier in June. The president invoked a federal law known as Title 10 to call the Guard on grounds to protect federal immigration officials and other federal law enforcement in response to demonstrations against immigration raids in Los Angeles. So there are, since then, a total of roughly 4,100 National Guard troops and 700 active duty U.S. Marines have been deployed into the city. Paul Evans, a Democrat from Monmouth, Oregon, a chief sponsor of the bill and former member of the Oregon Air National Guard, said the deployment of the Guard in that fashion gave him a sense of sadness. I think the mobilization of the National Guard against the governor's wishes inside their own state is exactly what the National Guard is not supposed to do, said Evans. As somebody who has spent time on active duty as well as in the Guard, a professional military officer for much of my career, there are clear lines, and this president has violated that line. And so this legislation restricts the Adjutant General, the Guard's top official in Oregon, from allowing federal agencies to activate National Guard members unless the mission meets specific criteria. And so so they believe that this law would help the governor to, Trump federalized the Oregon National Guard, would allow them greater legal standing to challenge that. And I thought was interesting was, so they basically feel that it would, on Wednesday last week, an appeals court ruled that the president did not need to seek Governor Gavin Newsom's permission to call up the Guard. And so California had pointed to a provision of Title 10 that said orders to federalize the Guard should, quote, go through the governors. But the court noted in its ruling that does not give governors any veto power. So they believe that this bill, if signed into law, would give Oregon a better argument in court if a similar situation and case is brought forward. And so that's where what's happening locally. Maybe contact your state senators to encourage them to pass the bill in the state senate as well, so it can be signed into law. If it provides some assistance in preventing that, so the further militarization in our own state. I would love to hear from you once again. Oh, we do have a caller. Hello, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Michael. Good morning. Appreciate your sharing what's happening and what the judiciary and Congress need to do. I live in Vancouver. I'm retired, but just looking at the political landscape of rhetoric and then what's real is that I have no idea what the government, as far as the I understand the judiciary system with the injunctions at different levels against what Trump is doing without going through due process. And I also understand that Congress needs to be involved in these type of international incidents. Looking back at Trump's first term, my question is kind of twofold. I know I'm looking for an answer, but just maybe what you see on the landscape is maybe happening that's safe to say. But, Trump was impeached twice in his first term, and it seemed to be a blend of politically motivated threats, plus other things too, but him not knowing just basically the decorum or American history or the process of government, it's beyond me how he even got elected. But my point is, what ramifications are there with Congress? What is the time length for them to react to these unconstitutional wrongs across the board, international, national? And then what is their process, since they already impeached him twice with nothing? And then the courts, if he's going to kick everything up to the Supreme Court and drag it out, it could be 2-3 years before we hear everything, and then we moved on to more atrocities. But how do you put an end to this and restore democracy where we use all three branches of government collectively and they have right of refusal? I mean, he's not even giving Congress or anybody right of refusal. He's doing these things, like you said, they're knee-jerk, where he's trying to help people, and then he falsifies claims, and there's no data to back anything up. So it seems to be that we internationally are recognized now as a loose cannon. I'll just take my answer on the air. Thank you.
Yeah, I do agree that it really sort of pains you when they say, the U.S. has bombed Iran, when really it's just Trump has bombed Iran. And the government is being equated with one man. And so he is facing, according to this ABC News report I just found, he is facing bipartisan blowback. Republican Representative Thomas Massey and Democratic Representative Ro Khanna introduced a war powers resolution last week to prohibit United States armed forces from unauthorized hostilities in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Democratic Senator Tim Kaine is leading a similar Senate resolution, which could come up sometime this week as the chamber tries to move forward with a mega bill to fund much of Trump's domestic policy agenda. And so I think that's his beautiful bill or whatever. A Republican Representative Thomas Massey contends that there was no imminent threat to the United States that would authorize the president to strike Iran without congressional approval. And then Senator Kaine says, this is the U.S. jumping into a war of choice that Donald Trump's urging without any compelling national security interest for the United States to act in this way, particularly without a debate and vote in Congress. We should not be sending troops and risking troops' lives in offensive war without a debate in Congress. And so Kaine is hoping Republicans push back. But he says, I know many Republicans will fall in line and say a president can do whatever he wants, but I hope members of the Senate and House will take their Article I responsibilities seriously. And so, and Kaine, of course, is a Democrat from Virginia. And I don't hold out much hope. It feels like the Republicans have completely abdicated their role as a check and balance to the executive branch. And are basically afraid that Trump will primary them with his followers and funding and make it difficult for them to be reelected. So they're just trying to ride his coattails and try to stay in office and in power. I don't think anything is going to happen that way, sadly enough. But there, of course, are some. There is some pushback happening in Congress, and the international condemnation of what's going on is also an issue, and I think that overall Trump's administration has been, pushing, trying to, basically questioning the existence of NATO. Removing sort of sources of soft power, like foreign aid and the Voice of America, closing that down, and which I'm sure Putin and everyone is very happy with, and then also attacking Harvard and many of our academic institutions in the United States, which he doesn't seem to understand that it's, you know, he's pandering for factory jobs, right, bringing factories back to the United States. But really, the U.S. has stayed, on top of the world economy through the education and attracting brilliant people to this country to conduct research and to develop new sort of technologies and other things to sort of stay at the top. I mean, that's where the growth is happening. It's not happening. How many Americans really want to be, he's driving out migrant workers. You know, there's not enough Americans who want to pick fruit at very low prices. And I think we discussed in the last show I hosted just the way that these rural farmers and orchard owners just don't—they're voting against the interests of their own business interests to make some sort of anti-immigrant statement, even as they employ migrant workers in this country. So I think that what Trump's his actions are going to culminate in is to basically decenter the United States in international power structures. You can see already that other actors from the EU to even Canada and China are trying to attract a lot of the graduate students and researchers that he's driving away from our universities, even as he's threatened, he's pulling funding for so much research. And there's other, Canada saying, come up here, come to our universities and do this research. And even China is trying to encourage these folks to come to their institutions. And of course, Europe is also, many European countries are trying to, grab a lot of these folks to basically increase their position, economic position. I don't think that Europe has been able to attract a lot of the sort of software, Silicon Valley type of development effectively. And even the dollar, there's been a sell. People aren't, other countries are not holding as many dollars as they used to. Decentering the U.S. After World War II at Bretton Woods, in a meeting that was held after World War II in New Hampshire, basically made the dollar the world currency. Which other currencies are pegged against, and gave the U.S. incredible sort of a centralized power over many economies in the country, and people buying other countries holding dollars helps the U.S. as well. So he is he is probably speeding up, even though his tagline is "Make America Great Again." He is probably speeding up the end of the American era, just as we saw the end of the British Empire. He is increasing that, and white Americans who are trying to hold on to that vision of an all-powerful, perfect America that existed before the Civil Rights Movement, the 1950s America, are going to find that is not what they're going to be building, because of course that America built on inequality. And the work, unpaid work of many folks, or low paid work, and also on a sort of socialist restructuring of our social system, social support network in the United States during the Great Depression, done by FDR, basically gave the structure, and of course the GI Bill allowed that sort of where everyone could buy a house suddenly, and the American dream was achievable by many, many more Americans than had been before, and so everything they're doing, they don't seem to understand how that egg was laid by the golden goose that laid it. And that golden goose was obviously more socialist program, socialism in social support by the federal government, and greater regulation, business regulation, particularly after the the collapse of the markets and in 1929, and many programs which the Republicans have been dismantling for decades now. And so they don't seem to understand how that perfect society that they are trying to get back to even came about. And so instead they think it was built on their own, lifting themselves up by their bootstraps, that whole mythology that we, I think another caller had referenced before, that detaches us from the reality that we face and has therefore made Trump the perfect leader for that, that contingent of U.S. citizens. And so I think we're coming to the end of the show. We're down to the last few minutes. I don't know if anyone would like to call in at this point. Once again, this has been Wednesday Talk Radio. This is Jacqueline Keeler, your host. And I'd like to thank everyone who called in and joined in the discussion about Trump and his unauthorized use of the military and by bombing Iran without congressional authorization, and what that means, where we're going, and what we can do about it, even locally, to try to stop this, and what the status is in the courts. So thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you again in next month.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th.